This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Diane Roberts. North Korea has test-fired a pair of ballistic missiles with a potential range of reaching Japan in a possible protest of Tokyo's adoption of a new security strategy to push for more offensive footing against North Korea and China. North Korea state media KCNA said on Monday the country conducted an important final phase test on Sunday for the development of a spy satellite, which it seeks to complete by April 2023. South Korea and Japan condemned the North's latest missile launches. The launches came 2 days after the North claimed to have performed a key test needed to build a more mobile, powerful intercontinental ballistic missile. A Donetsk hospital was struck by the Ukrainian military on Sunday, leaving one patient dead, according to local authorities. The Minister of Healthcare of Donetsk People's Republic said two patients had been injured after two of the hospital buildings were hit by shelling. A giant Hanukkah menorah was lit in downtown Kyiv Sunday, the day after massive Russian rocket attacks on Ukraine. The ceremony on the first night of Hanukkah was attended by U.S., German, Canadian, French, Polish, Greek, and Japanese ambassadors to Ukraine. Hundreds of people celebrated the Jewish festival of Hanukkah in front of the Brandenburg Gate on Sunday evening in the German capital. The executive director of Shabbat Lubavitch in Berlin gave a speech in which he emphasized the importance of light winning over darkness.
Very spot stood Hitler and the Nazis and scream death to the Jews, and here we are today lighting the menorah. This is the spirit and the positive energy of the Jewish people and of tolerance for the future.
This is VOA News. Around a dozen people were injured in a blast on a ferry in Myanmar's commercial hub Yangon on Sunday, a security source and local media said. The blast hit a passenger ferry crossing the Yangon River to the district of Dala around 7 p.m. local time, a security source told AFP, requesting anonymity to talk to the media. A junta spokesperson did not respond to the request for comment. Myanmar has been in turmoil since the military seized power in a coup last year, with anti-coup rebels clashing with junta troops across the country. Truckers and public transport drivers continue to strike for the seventh day in parts of Jordan on Sunday, demanding a reduction in fuel prices and taxes. The drivers said attempts by the government to break the strike by using private companies have failed, stressing that their sit-in was peaceful. The drivers confirmed that the strike will not end until the government deals with rising fuel prices. Get ready for an extra cold Christmas. Arctic air will blast much of the United States just before the holiday. AP correspondent Julie Walker has more.
Forecasters are warning of treacherous holiday travel and life-threatening cold for big parts of the nation.
Below zero readings are likely and expected across the northern plains and portions of the upper Midwest. But even for locations down into the southeast, mid-Atlantic, temperatures dipping down into the single digits or teens.
National Weather Service meteorologist Zach Taylor also says besides the Arctic blast, rain and snow are also in the forecast.
Potential there for some heavy rainfall across the eastern U.S. And on the colder side of the storm system, we're looking at a potential for a swath of locally heavy snowfall somewhere across the Ohio Valley and Great Lakes.
I'm Julie Walker.
Fans in Buenos Aires will be celebrating into the wee hours after Argentina's win over France 4-2 in a penalty shootout in Sunday's World Cup finals match. Argentina's Lionel Messi finally has won the biggest prize in soccer, despite France's Kylian Mbappe scoring the first World Cup hat trick since 1966. Argentina won after a 3-3 draw. Dejected but still proud of France's World Cup team, French President Emmanuel Macron congratulated Argentina and Argentines for their win in Sunday's final. He sought to console the devastated Mbappe and other France players in the locker room. He praised Mbappe's extraordinary performance and stressed that he's only 24 and has already had the rare experience of playing in two World Cup finals. Macron said the French players are expected to return to France Monday and parade down the Champs-Élysées. By remote, Diane Roberts, VOA News.
Today is Monday, December 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Japan protests as North Korea fires ballistic missiles that could strike its territory.
The country's Joint Chiefs of Staff said the two medium-range missiles flew about 311 miles. Japan's Vice Defense Minister, Toshiro Ino, said the missiles appeared to have landed outside Japan's exclusive economic zone.
The UN warns of risks to billions of people who lack access to safe drinking water, sanitation, and hygiene.
Data collected from 121 countries show billions of people are facing a health crisis, and states must act urgently to improve water, sanitation, and hygiene, known as WASH.
And Argentina beats France to lift the World Cup in Qatar. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. South Korea and Japan says North Korea fired two ballistic missiles towards the sea of the Korean Peninsula's east coast on Sunday, prompting South Korea's presidential office to, quote, strongly, unquote, condemn Pyongyang for escalating tensions. Lauren Anthony of Reuters reports.
South Korea's presidential office strongly condemned Pyongyang for escalating tensions. The country's Joint Chiefs of Staff said the two medium-range missiles flew about 311 miles. Japan's Vice Defense Minister, Toshiro Ino, said the missiles appeared to have landed outside Japan's exclusive economic zone.
North Korea's series of rapidly escalating provocations threatens the peace and security of Japan, the region, and the international community, and must not be tolerated. It violates the relevant Security Council resolutions, and Japan has lodged a strong protest with North Korea through our embassy in Beijing and strongly condemned their actions.
He added that there had been no report of damages. The North missile launch comes just days after the country tested a high-thrust, solid-fuel engine. Experts say it would allow for quicker and more mobile launches of ballistic missiles as it seeks to develop a new strategic weapon and speed up its nuclear and missile programs. North Korea has conducted an unprecedented number of missile tests this year, including an intercontinental ballistic missile capable of reaching the US mainland, despite international bans and sanctions. In November, Japanese officials said North Korea test-fired an ICBM that landed just 130 miles off Japan. Japan on Friday unveiled its biggest military build-up since World War II. The $320 billion plan will buy missiles capable of striking China and ready it for sustained conflict.
That's Lauren Anthony of Reuters. And the United Nations Sunday marked International Migrants Day to commemorate the contributions of hundreds of millions of migrants who have faced challenges to leave home for a better life. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
This year's celebrations occur as increasing numbers of European countries close their doors to refugees and economic migrants from Afghanistan, the Middle East, and Africa. They're taking place as a growing number of migrants from Central America try to cross the southern U.S. border. The United Nations says people do not willingly leave home. It says most of the world's 280 million international migrants have been forced to move by conflict, persecution, desperate poverty, and increasingly climate change. Many migrants who lack legal pathways take dangerous routes to countries of asylum. Many are exploited, abused, and die along the way. The International Organization for Migration estimates more than 50,000 migrants have died and thousands more have disappeared over the past 8 years. IOM Director General Antonio Vitorino says the world is failing to protect the most vulnerable people.
Indeed, the world over, migrants move, often at great risk, for the most fundamental of reasons, to seek a better future for themselves and their families. Behind every journey, there is a person, there is a story, no less valid than our own. This year, to mark International Migrants Day, I want to pay tribute to all those who have died or disappeared on the threshold of their dreams.
World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus echoes these sentiments. He says countries have a legal and moral duty to assist those in distress and provide health services and protection for vulnerable people.
In seeking a better life, many migrants are in vulnerable situations, suffer from poor health, and cannot access health services. We can prevent suffering and save lives by supporting countries to build resilient health and care systems that are sensitive to the needs of migrants.
The United Nations says migrants' rights are human rights and must be respected without discrimination. These rights, it adds, pertain regardless of whether people are forced to flee or move voluntarily. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Malaysia's new Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim has been tested early in his administration. Many citizens have high hopes that he can improve the country's struggling economy. For VOA News, Dave Gronenbaum has the story from Kuala Lumpur.
It's breakfast time for the Lim family. With three-year-old twins, it's not a relaxing meal for parents Leo and Kaysen. But beyond the usual stress parents have always faced, there's additional economic pressure. Rising food prices have forced this middle-income couple to cut out unnecessary costs, such as date nights at nice restaurants.
We are actually trying our best to just keep ourselves afloat.
Leo Lim says the family's food bill is up about 30% compared to a year ago. According to the Malaysia-based Education and Research Association for Consumers, in the past 3 months, milk prices have increased 20%. Some vegetables cost 4 to 5 times more. And in the past 6 months, the price of pork has gone up by 25%. For families like the Lims, it's taking a toll.
Most of us are struggling. Even the middle class are struggling. We are starting to feel the pinch.
They are hoping Malaysia's new Prime Minister, Anwar Ibrahim, can bring down food prices and kickstart the country's pandemic-battered economy.
They do have a lot of things to prove to the citizen, that to the voters.
The most important task for Anwar Ibrahim, because for ordinary people on the street, whether their life get better or not, is ultimately the first yardstick they're going to use to measure, to evaluate this government.
Political science professor Wong Chin Wat of Sunway University says he expects Anwar's administration to provide targeted subsidies for the country's poorest and income tax breaks for the middle class. To cover the costs, Wong says Anwar's administration will likely reintroduce a goods and services tax that was abolished in 2018, but the new rate will be lower than before.
Now, none of this would be enough to make people feel that life is very good, but what is important is they feel the government is with them. The government knows what to do.
Anwar's administration might soon be dealing with large-scale natural disasters. Malaysia is now in the monsoon season, and there are concerns about a repeat of the floods from almost a year ago that killed more than 50 people, displaced more than 120,000, and caused almost $1.5 billion in losses.
Well, if there's going to be another massive floods like what we have seen last year-end, Anwar government is expected to deal with it swiftly, effectively, and to provide emergency response and relief to those needed. If he fails to do so, all the claim of his government's competence would be questioned severely.
So whether it's floods or the everyday needs of families, the new administration cannot afford to fail. Dave Grunebaum for VOA News, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
Thank you, Dave. And the Pentagon says it has received a lot of new reports of UFOs. Associated Press Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
A new Pentagon office was set up over the summer to track not just unidentified objects in the sky, but underwater and in space. That came after more than a year of attention on flying objects military pilots saw, but were sometimes reluctant to report. A year and a half ago, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence reported 144 such encounters between 2004 and 2021. Since then, the new Pentagon Office's director says there have been several hundred new reports, but no evidence so far of alien life. Things like stealth fighters and drones can be mistaken for UFOs. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The sixth goal final between France and Argentina set a world record of 172 at this year's tournament. The previous tournament record of 171 goals was set in 1998 and 2014. Lionel Messi finally won the biggest prize in soccer. Argentina beat France 4-2 in a penalty shootout to claim a third World Cup title, despite Kylian Mbappe scoring the first hat-trick in a final in 56 years. The World Health Organization warns billions of people who lack access to safe drinking water, sanitation, and hygiene are at risk of deadly infectious diseases. The finding appears in the WHO and UN Water Global Analysis and Assessment of Sanitation and Drinking Water, GLASS, report issued this week. Again, Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Data collected from 121 countries show billions of people are facing a health crisis, and states must act urgently to improve water, sanitation, and hygiene, known as WASH. The report, the most comprehensive to date, finds most countries are not on track to achieve the UN Sustainable Development Goal of providing water and sanitation for all by 2030. Bruce Gordon is Unit Head, Water, Sanitation, Hygiene, and Health at the WHO. While dramatic acceleration is needed, he says only 25% of countries are on track to meet their target for sanitation and only 45% for drinking water.
And this is against a backdrop of a tremendous amount of, you know, disease from diarrhea, linked to ingestion of poor water, with the root cause of poor sanitation, lack of hand hygiene that impacts also on respiratory infections. And so almost 2 million people are dying every year because of poorly managed water, sanitation, and hygiene.
Gordon says countries need to recommit to the targets they have made to save those lives. He notes a major opportunity to do that will occur during an historic UN Water and Sanitation Conference in March. For the first time in 50 years, he says the global community will gather to review progress and make voluntary commitments to improve the water situation. The report delves into the impact climate-related extreme weather events have on impeding the delivery of safe WASH services. Gordon says the report highlights the importance of climate resilience and adaptation to climate change.
And yet, when we look at the policy response, whether it's climate-resilient technologies, which are simple things to avoid floods or to mitigate droughts, simple risk management or simple technologies, these are not being put in place.
The WHO report calls on governments to dramatically increase investments to extend access to safely managed drinking water and sanitation services. It urges them to scale up support for WASH service delivery by putting in place monitoring systems, regulatory functions, and capacity development. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Floods in the state of South Australia are forecast to be the worst since 1956, after official analysis showed when waters are expected to peak. Thousands of properties are expected to be inundated. This week, the Australian military was brought in to help with evacuations and flood preparations. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
This is a slow-moving disaster as floodwaters bear down on South Australia. The flooding is caused by vast amounts of rain that have fallen in the eastern Australian states of Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria over the past 3 years. They've experienced widespread flooding and record-breaking rainfall. Much of that water is slowly flowing into the Murray River in South Australia. Hundreds of properties have already been inundated, and authorities have warned many more could follow. John Gahardy is a Lutheran pastor in areas likely to see floodwaters peak between Christmas and New Year's Eve. He told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Friday that his parishioners felt great unease.
Certainly causing some feelings of fear and anxiety about what it will actually mean over the next months, for some increased isolation. In general, people are able to look at the big picture and see, well, they've gotten through things before. The joy of Christmas is still to be celebrated, but maybe just in different ways and in ways that need to be more flexible this year.
Two climatic phenomena, La Niña, the cooling of parts of the Pacific Ocean, and the Indian Ocean dipole, the gap between eastern and western Indian Ocean surface temperatures, have been fueling the flooding. Both occur naturally and are influenced by warmer ocean temperatures. They've dumped above average rainfall across much of Australia and experts believe they've been exacerbated by climate change. However, Australia's Bureau of Meteorology said in a December 6 update that the Indian Ocean dipole has returned to neutral. The La Nina weather phenomenon that's fueled the flooding is expected to continue to influence Australia's climate until next February, according to the Bureau. Sydney is having its wettest year on record. More than 2 metres of rain have fallen on Australia's biggest city, breaking the previous record set in 1950. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In a year marked by yet more climate-linked floods, hurricanes and droughts, governments and companies were forced to look more closely at the financial risks and their exposure to liability. With the new year, expect more public anxiety as climate change continues to escalate. Angela Johnston of Reuters reports.
Rising climate costs will be a big challenge in 2023. From record heat waves to collapsing glaciers, an unending drought. 2022 marked yet another year of climate-linked natural disasters. And the financial risks and liabilities linked to those disasters are rising. It might soon be possible to calculate how much a country has contributed to climate change or even specific disasters. This line of argument, called climate attribution science, has made its way into more courtrooms. There are about 2,200 climate-related lawsuits in play around the world, nearly a third of them in the U.S., and that all comes as disasters are becoming more costly. Insurers felt the pain in 2022 with three of the costliest disasters of the decade: dystopian flooding in Pakistan, deadly summer heat waves in Europe, and Hurricane Ian's destruction across Florida and South Carolina. The three collectively caused more than $150 billion in losses.
I'm just so decided.
Meanwhile, at the UN conference in Egypt, countries reached a landmark agreement on a loss and damage fund. It would help poor countries cope with climate-fueled disaster costs. But details on who would contribute and who would benefit are still missing. Also, the talks did little to address the cause of those disasters: rising levels of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. Public anxiety will keep growing as climate change escalates. Companies and investors will likely face pressure to climate-proof their operations. Governments and firms could be hit with more climate court cases. At the end of the year, countries will meet again at COP28 in Dubai. They'll still be under pressure to see that emissions are cut in half by 2030 and to net zero by 2050. It's the only path to keeping global warming within 1.5 degrees Celsius.
That's Angela Johnston of Reuters.
This is Science in a Minute.
A rocket carrying the Surface Water and Ocean Topography spacecraft, or SWAT, lifted off from the Vandenberg Space Force base on December 16th. SWAT is a joint venture between NASA and France's National Center for Space Studies, with contributions from the Canadian Space Agency and the UK Space Agency. The spacecraft, which will reside in low Earth orbit, will observe nearly all of our planet's surface water for the next 3 years of its prime mission. According to a NASA press release, SWAT will scan 90% of the Earth's surface to measure the height of fresh water as well as ocean water. The space agency says data gathered by the spacecraft will provide scientists with insights such as how the ocean affects climate change and how communities can be better prepared for disasters such as floods. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday, join us as we put the latest developments into a global context with stories, interviews, and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint or in your favorite podcast player. Protests have been growing inside and outside Iran, initially sparked by the death and police custody of Mahsa Amini, a young woman arrested by Iran's morality police for not having her hair fully covered. Each Wednesday, Go beyond the breaking news with VOA's Flashpoint Iran. Listen online at voanews.com or in your podcast player.
Hey there, it's Shauna Renee, also known as the Lady DJ, inviting you to join me every Thursday at 10 and 2200 UTC for today's hit countdown. Each week, I count down the top 20 songs in pop music according to Billboard and Rolling Stone magazines, but more importantly, according to you, the VOA listeners. Again, that's Thursdays at 10 and 2200 UTC right here on VOA 1.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
After 3 years of relative calm in Syria, a slow escalation of violence is threatening to upend the strategic stalemate that has pacified much of the fighting in the country's 11-year-old civil war. According to Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator Martin Griffiths, shelling, airstrikes, and clashes in the vicinity of Idlib in early November have destroyed the homes of hundreds of displaced families taking refuge in three camps supported by humanitarian organizations. We reiterate our call for a cessation of violence in northwest Syria, said U.S. Representative to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
The so far sporadic incidents between rival factions risk spiraling into widespread fighting. It is incumbent on all sides to agree to and implement a comprehensive nationwide ceasefire that protects civilians from violence. The United States urges an immediate de-escalation in northern Syria.
Indeed, the plight of Syria's civilian population is growing more desperate, said Undersecretary General Griffiths. Since the conflict in Syria began in March 2011, 80% of its population depend on aid. This year, 14.6 million Syrians will need humanitarian aid. Next year, this number is expected to rise to over 15 million. This is a humanitarian crisis that has never been more dire, a humanitarian crisis that has been exacerbated by the intensification of violence across the country, the growing cholera outbreak, and the onset of winter, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
The U.S. has delivered on our commitment to fund early recovery activities, including through contributions to the UN pooled fund. Between January and September of this year, the UN has worked to program over $500 million toward 374 early recovery projects. These projects were in all 14 governorates of Syria, all 14. There's no denying this represents real progress in early recovery. Over 2.4 million Syrians have directly benefited from this work.
Cross-border delivery of humanitarian aid is the difference between life and death, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. Its continuation is a moral imperative. We cannot allow attempts to make noise on issues unrelated to the delivery of humanitarian aid to cloud the clarity of this choice.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.